New heading, Semantics and the Superior Nature of Spiritual Intelligence. There has been an enormous amount of study, observation, and research in the area of intelligence, particularly over the last 20 years. There are numerous books and an entire body of literature. Different words are sometimes used to describe the same things. Part of what I call spiritual intelligence, some people may call emotional intelligence and vice versa. I fully acknowledge this semantics difficulty. Again, I encourage you, the reader, to not get hung up on word definitions, but to search continuously for the underlying meaning. Howard Gardner's book on the theory of multiple intelligences, called Frames of Mind, is a brilliant treatment of the concept of separate yet overlapping intelligences. I've also gained greatly from both Robert Cooper's and Daniel Goldman's work on emotional intelligence. I have heard their presentations in different settings and know that their approaches are research-based and comprehensive and include some of the elements I've spoken about under spiritual intelligence. Some books separate visual intelligence from verbal, analytical, artistic, logical, creative, economic, and other intelligences. I appreciate their contributions, but again believe that you can put them all under the four areas of body, mind, heart, and spirit. The four dimensions of life are fundamental paradigm and model for this entire book. I'll never forget an experience in Hawaii with the Young Presidents Organization. A small group of corporate presidents gathered for breakfast with some of the leading authorities in the field of management and leadership, each of whom had written notable bestsellers and were widely respected and quoted. In a forum where no one was being quoted and where there was a great deal of mutual respect, one of the presidents asked with a real sense of humility, "Aren't you guys basically saying the same thing?" To a person, they acknowledged that they were in a basic sense. Each had his or her own semantics and definitions, and often had some unique insight not voiced by the others. But in terms of the most basic elements, they were the same. They talked more in terms of underlying principles than practices. I really had to work hard to avoid the semantics problem myself and do so by always looking for the underlying meanings. But I do believe there is another dimension of intelligence that has not been treated in great depth elsewhere, and that is the role of spiritual intelligence in guiding and directing the other intelligences. In that sense, it is superior to the other intelligences. This is the way William Bloom put it. In moments of powerful beauty, emotions move that can melt even the thickest and most cynical of skins. Endorphins flow. There is a release of tension. Energies, internal and external, flow and connect. The experience is not only soft and calm, but it also contains the power and creativity of nature and the universe. To create and to work consciously with these moments of connection is to exercise what we might call our spiritual muscles and our spiritual intelligence. What do I mean by spiritual? I simply mean that whole reality and dimension which is bigger, more creative, more loving, more powerful, more visionary, more wise, more mysterious than materialistic daily human existence. There is no theology or belief system that relates to this meaning of spiritual. Close quote. Let me share an experience that may help make the point of spiritual intelligence being the highest of our capacities. I am enormously impressed with the work of the late Anwar Sadat, President of Egypt. In his efforts with former U.S. President Jimmy Carter and former Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin to bring about the Camp David peace accord between Israel and Egypt. While being given a tour of the grounds of Camp David in a golf cart a few years ago, I was shown by the President of the United States the exact location where that accord was signed. It was a very emotional experience for me. I have come to see Sadat as a person that knew about the space between stimulus and response. He developed enormous space as a young man while in solitary confinement in cell 54 of the Cairo Central Prison. Just sense the depth of that understanding reflected in his words. Quoting him, "He who cannot change the very fabric of his thought will never be able to change reality, and will never, therefore, make any progress." Again, Sadat's quote, listen carefully. "He who cannot change the very fabric of his thought will never be able to change reality, and will never, therefore, make any progress." Close quote. Before his shift in perspective concerning Israel, Sadat had become an enormously popular president, deeply devoted to the Arab cause. He went around Egypt giving political speeches about how he would never shake the hand of an Israeli as long as they occupied 1 inch of Arab soil, shouting, "Never, never, never." The enormous crowds of people would shout back, "Never, never, never." We invited Sadat's wife, Madame Johan Sadat, to be the keynote speaker at her international symposium. I had the privilege of having lunch with her. I asked her what it was like living with Anwar Sadat, particularly at the time he made the bold peace initiative of going to the Knesset in Jerusalem, a move that culminated in the Camp David Accord. She said that she had a hard time believing his change of heart, particularly after all he'd been doing and saying. Here's my paraphrasing of what she recounted. Confronting him directly in the living quarters of the palace, she asked him, "I understand you were thinking about going to Israel. Is this correct?" "Yes," he answered. "How could you possibly do this after all you've been saying?" "I was wrong, and this is the right thing to do." "You will lose the leadership and support of the Arab world." "I suppose that could happen, but I don't think it will." "You will lose the presidency of your country." "That too could happen." "You'll lose your life." And as we know, he did to an assassin's bullet. He responded to that, "My life is ordained. It will not be 1 minute longer or 1 minute shorter than it was ordained to be." She embraced him and said he was the greatest person she had ever known. Then I asked her what it was like when he returned from Israel. She said it normally takes 30 minutes to travel from the airport to the palace. That day it took over 3 hours. The highways and streets were thronged with hundreds of thousands of people cheering Sadat in enthusiastic support of what he was doing. The same people who just 1 week earlier had been cheering for the exact opposite approach. He was doing what was right, and they knew it. Spiritual intelligence is a higher endowment than emotional intelligence. They recognize that you cannot think and live independently in an interdependent world. Sadat had subordinated his ego and EQ, that is, his social sensitivity, empathy, and social skills, to his SQ, his conscience, and the results resonated throughout the whole world. The leadership of his spiritual intelligence elevated his other intelligences, and he became a person of tremendous moral authority. This pathway to moral authority, personal fulfillment, and influence for good is not the realm of great world leaders alone. The potential for simple, quiet, great moral authority lies within each one of us. As we consider these great intelligences and these birth gifts in the larger context of the entire world and of history, I have come to a very deep conviction. When the history of the world and of institutions, societies, communities, families, and individuals is finally written, the dominant theme will be the degree to which people have lived not by their socialized conscience, but by their divine conscience. That is, the innate intuitive wisdom contained in the principles or natural laws that are taught in all the major religions and the enduring philosophies of the world. It won't be geopolitics, economics, government, wars, social culture, art, education, or churches. The moral or spiritual dimension, that is, how true people and institutions are to universal, timeless principles of right and wrong. This will be the overarching and underlying supreme governing force.